Chapter 2, Containment and Its Discontents, 1992 to 2001. For over a decade after the 1991 war, it was the policy associated with General Zinni that prevailed, even through the first year of the presidency of George W. Bush. The aim of the U.S. government, generally in its words and certainly in its actions, was containment of Iraq, ringing Saddam Hussein with military forces, building up ground facilities in Kuwait, running intelligence operations in Kurdish areas, flying warplanes over much of his territory, and periodically pummeling Iraqi military and intelligence facilities with missiles and bombs. The Saddam Must Go school, associated with Paul Wolfowitz, was a dissident minority voice, generally disdained by those holding power in the U.S. government. Looking back at the containment policy, Zinni said, "We were piecemealing things without the coherence of a strategy. I'm not saying that the piecemealing things when it came about weren't necessary or didn't make sense, but they needed to be reviewed, and we needed some sort of strategic context back here to put them all inside of." It was a problem he would try to address when he became chief of Central Command in 1997. But overall, he thought, the policy worked. "We contained Saddam," he said. "We watched his military shrink to less than half its size from the beginning of the Gulf War until the time I left command. Not only shrinking in size, but dealing with obsolete equipment, ill-trained troops, dissatisfaction in the ranks, a lot of absenteeism. We didn't see the Iraqis as a formidable force. We saw them as a decaying force." One day in 1996, Paul Wolfowitz toured Gettysburg with a group of specialists in military strategy from Johns Hopkins University's School of International Studies, where he became dean after his service under Cheney at the Pentagon. Late in the afternoon, as the sun dipped toward Seminary Ridge, Wolfowitz stood at the center of the battlefield, near the spot where the soldiers of Pickett's charge had hit the Federal line and were thrown back by point-blank cannon blasts. Pointedly, Elliot Cohen, the Johns Hopkins professor running the tour, had Wolfowitz read aloud to the group the angry telegram that President Lincoln had drafted, but never sent, to the new commander of the Army of the Potomac, General George Meade. "Why," Lincoln wanted to ask his general, "do you stop and not pursue your enemy when you have him on the run?" Wolfowitz came to believe that the policy of containment was profoundly immoral, like standing by and trying to contain Hitler's Germany. It was a comparison to which he would often return. It carried particular weight coming from him, as he had lost most of his Polish extended family in the Holocaust. His line survived because his father had left Poland in 1920. He talked about the Holocaust more in terms of policy than of personal history, most notably in giving him a profound wariness of policies of containment. He told the New York Times' Eric Schmidt that sense of what happened in Europe in World War II has shaped a lot of my views. What if the West had tried to contain Hitler? This orientation toward Nazism would prove central to his thinking on Iraq. Again and again, he would describe Saddam Hussein and his security forces as the modern equivalent of the Gestapo. It was almost a verbal tic with him. Some observers of Wolfowitz speculate that another lesson he took from the Holocaust is that the American people need to be pushed to do the right thing, because by the time the United States entered World War II, it had been too late for millions of Jews and other victims of the Nazis. Asked about this in an interview before the war, Wolfowitz agreed and expanded on the thought, and himself linked it to Iraq. "I think the world in general has a tendency to say, if somebody evil like Saddam is killing his own people, that's too bad, but that's really not my business." "That's dangerous," he continued, "because Hussein was in a class with very few others. Stalin, Hitler, Kim Jong-il, people of that order of evil tend not to keep evil at home. They tend to export it in various ways, and eventually it bites us." After teaching political science at Yale, Wolfowitz, as a diplomat, helped bring democracy to South Korea and the Philippines in the 1970s and 80s. He took away from those experiences a belief that every country is capable of becoming democratic, and that their becoming so aids the American cause. "I think democracy is a universal idea," he would say, And I think letting people rule themselves happens to be something that serves Americans and America's interests. Wolfowitz's bookish background also gave him an academic manner that can be disarming. There is in Wolfowitz little of the blustery Princeton frat boy towel-snapping banter on which Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld seems to thrive. His soft voice and mild manner frequently surprise those who have braced themselves for the encounter. I actually was surprised to find, the first time I met him, that he was pretty likable, which surprised me because I hate him, said Paul Arcangeli, who served as an Army officer in Iraq before being medically retired. His loathing, he explained, is a policy matter. I blame him for all this shit in Iraq. Even more than Rumsfeld, I blame him. His bottom line on Wolfowitz? Dangerously idealistic and crack-smoking stupid. But Wolfowitz's low-key manner cloaked a tough-minded determination that ran far deeper than is common in compromise-minded Washington. One of the most important lessons of the Cold War, he wrote in the spring of 2000, was demonstrating that your friends will be protected and taken care of, that your enemies will be punished, and that those who refuse to support you will live to regret having done so.